First, the Mississippi River plays an important role in American history and culture. Its banks are hubs for industry, transportation, tourism, and community. It's no surprise to anybody who lives on the upper Mississippi River in Wisconsin and elsewhere in the Midwest. Its waters hold all sorts of wildlife, too. Almost 200 species of fish and mammals combined call the upper Mississippi their home. A new report takes a close look at the ecosystems of the upper Mississippi, including changes in water levels, water quality, wildlife diversity, and habitat. The U.S. Geological Survey and several other partners found some room for concern and some good news, too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If a river runs through your community, if it's the Mississippi or one of its tributaries, how important is that to your community? What problems do you see when it comes to river conservation in your area? Do you enjoy tourism along the Mississippi? Call in with your thoughts, your experiences, maybe your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kristen Boska is a research ecologist with the U.S. Geological Survey Upper Midwest Environmental Science Center in La Crosse. Kristen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Before we get into the findings, a lot, it looks like, went into this study. Can you talk about the years of research that led to this final product?
Oh, yes, definitely. So the monitoring of the river has been going on for nearly 30 years. And so we have a program called the Upper Mississippi River Restoration Program. Within that, there's a long-term resource monitoring element that USGS oversees, but the monitoring is actually done by our partner state agencies, so the Department of Natural Resources of Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, the Illinois Natural History Survey, and the Missouri Department of Conservation. So they monitor 6 study reaches across the river, and they've been doing so since 1993, and they monitor water quality, fish communities, and aquatic vegetation. We also tied in some other data, including hydrology data from the USGS gauge stations and some land cover data that we collect as part of our program.
Let's talk about some of the findings now. First of all, the amount of water running through the upper Mississippi, leading in some cases to flooding. What kind of things did we find out?
Right. So a colleague of mine looked back at discharge records for a subset of gauges on the river, and back to 1940 in some cases. And what she found was really greater discharge, or the amount, greater amounts of water really running through the system at any point in time, and that those high flow conditions were lasting longer. So basically, there's more water in the river more of the time. And a little bit more so, she also identified a shift in some of our peak mean flows. So typically we see a spring flood pulse in April. It's been shifting further into the summer months, into May and June as well. And this has a lot of implications because you can think about the amount of water running through the system influences the depth of the water, the velocity of the water, the inundation of the floodplain. It really influences sediment transport. That water is sort of the power that moves sediment. And so it can influence habitat conditions and a whole suite of ecological connections.
What do we know about some of the causes of that increase in the quantity and then the speed of water flow?
Right. So this report didn't go into a lot of the causes, but it does sort of summarize the findings of others. And there's really three critical, maybe driving forces behind these changes. One of them is simply precipitation patterns and changing precipitation patterns, the amount of water that's running or that's coming to the basin. Another one is the rate at which that water runs off into the river. So activities that change either like the imperviousness, so like paving over a field, for example, it increases the rate of delivery of that water to the system. And so we've seen changes throughout the watershed with different land uses. And then we also have engineered structures throughout the floodplain and the river itself, whether those are navigation structures or levees that influence the conveyance of water, kind of forces that water, moves it downstream faster, I guess. And so those things, we don't really know which contributes more or less. It likely depends on each flood event, really, and how that water transpires through the watershed. But those three factors are discussed by several other reports.
Talking to Kristen Bosco with the U.S. Geological Survey Upper Midwest Environmental Science Center in La Crosse, looking at a big new report on the Upper Mississippi River. That's the part that runs along Wisconsin and other places, too. You could join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Now, how about water quality? If I'm reading the report right, Kristen, it looks like there's some positive news there.
Yeah, definitely. Across the system, there's been... most of the system, I would say. There's been a decline in phosphorus. So a lot of this can be attributed to improvements in wastewater treatment, particularly in communities. And we've also seen declines in what we call total suspended solids. Those are the things that are floating around in the river that kind of minimize the clarity of the water. And so we've seen improvements in water clarity and improvement declines in phosphorus. We haven't seen the same in nitrogen, where we've seen mostly increases in nitrogen, except for in the Illinois River, where we have our study reach. Some of the consequences, or depending on how you view it, we've also seen an increase in aquatic vegetation with this improved water clarity, which, particularly in the stretch of river that borders Wisconsin. And so the prevalence of aquatic vegetation has really increased over the last 20 years, really. And the fish communities have shifted as well with that.
We'll get into some more of the fish species and more wildlife. Let's go to our callers now, though, at 800-642-1234. Karen is with us just across the border in Illinois. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up?
Me?
Yep, go for it.
Yes, I was saw a report with John Oliver on the drought affecting the Colorado River Basin, and there was a proposal that's been floated to drain, put a pipe and to divert some of the Mississippi River west to supplement the Colorado River water basin. And it reminded me of years back when the Texans bought an outlet on Lake Michigan and were proposing a pipe to drain Lake Michigan water for Texas farmers.
Karen, I gotcha. Thanks a lot for the call. Now, I know there's the Great Lakes Compact that prevents that happening from the Great Lakes watershed. Kristen, I don't know if the report looks at anything like this. Have you run into any proposals to divert Mississippi River Basin water outside of the basin?
You know, I'm sure the idea has been floated. I have not heard of any proposed legislation that would allow that. I think there'd be some hurdles. For sure. There's a lot of people that value the Mississippi River, and so there'd be some controversy, I believe.
Thanks for the call, Karen. We'll go to Jeff now in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon. I invite the listeners of this program to come up here to Douglas County, where the headwaters of the Brule River and the St. Croix are in Solon Springs, Wisconsin, and there's a spring right there in the park with a boat landing where you can drink the water as it flows right from the earth. It's crystal clear, it's cold, runs year-round, it's fresh water, it's delicious, and that water comes out of a spring which flows into the St. Croix, which flows into the Mississippi.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call and the plug for your local park there, too. Kristen, I know I saw you covered in the report some of the tributaries. I saw the Black River, the Chippewa River. I don't know if the St. Croix was part of the study.
I don't believe we have. You know, we really focus on the we collect data basically in the tributaries that come into our study reaches. So we have six study reaches, and the St. Croix comes in a little bit further north than our first most northern upstream study reach, Pool 4, on the river. So I don't believe we have any data, but there are other agencies certainly that collect data on the St. Croix.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Kristen Boska is a research ecologist with the U.S. Geological Survey. Talk to her about a new report on the Upper Mississippi River, how it's changing, what it means for the people, plants, and animals that live along the river. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you live along the Mississippi? Have you seen changes over the years? How important is it to your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation, meet some of the wildlife coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about the results of a decades-long study of the Upper Mississippi River with research ecologist Kristen Boska from the U.S. Geological Survey. Kristen's based in La Crosse, sharing the key findings and what they mean for people, plants, other animals who live along the Mississippi. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences on the river, your questions. That's 800-642-1234. Kristen, before I go back to our callers, can you talk a little bit about the biodiversity in the Upper Mississippi River?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's a real, no matter what taxonomic group, you know, the birds, fish, aquatic vegetation, riparian vegetation. It's a very diverse system. And really, we only monitor a subset with fish and aquatic vegetation. There's reptiles and mussels and invertebrates and so forth. And it is really both rich in terms of the numbers of species and diverse in terms of, you know, the relative abundance of these different species. Yeah, if you pick up a one strand of aquatic vegetation in the river and look at it closely, it's crawling with life. It's pretty amazing.
One species I know people are concerned about is the Asian carp that's made its way up a lot of the Mississippi River. What are you looking at when it comes to the carp and the damage it's done?
Right. So we monitor the fish communities in six study reaches. Three of those study reaches have silver and bighead carp established, meaning that they're there and they're reproducing. And three of the study reaches, the most upstream study reaches, do not have silver or bighead carp at this point. And so what's been really interesting is that, you know, the establishment of these species has happened within the time frame that we've been monitoring. So we've been able to track some of the effects that these species have had, particularly in the LaGrange pool of the Illinois River. So, for example, they're really, they consume a lot of plankton, the small little organisms that they filter feed in the water. And so there's been documented shifts in plankton communities in the Illinois River, and those have implications to other species like gizzard shad that also consume plankton resources. There's also been work that has looked at, that has looked at the competition with like larval fishes and juvenile fishes. We saw declines in forage fishes in this report, which is sort of overlaps with the establishment of the carp, the silver and bighead carp species, where they've established. So that's a concern, particularly because those forage fishes are the fish that the bigger fish are eating, that the birds are eating, and they really serve an important role in terms of like the food web of the river.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Melis is with us in Washburn. Melis, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, great. So my question is related to the increase in nitrogen. I was wondering if your researcher could elaborate a bit on the downstream effects of that, especially with regard to the Gulf of Mexico dead zone sources, and maybe what can be done to address that.
Alice, thanks for the call. Kristen, nitrogen in the water.
Yeah, our nitrogen levels have increased in most of the river, and they are—they do exceed sort of the EPA criteria. So we are a very nutrient-rich river. There are implications for that locally, including sort of nuisance algal blooms, potentially even harmful algal blooms that can be, can damage. It can be impactful to human health. As you move downstream, of course, yeah, the the upper Mississippi River Basin contributes to the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico. And so while we've had noticeable success in reducing phosphorus, as I mentioned earlier, nitrogen is really another challenge and may require just changes to fertilizers and things like that that are distributed quite broadly across the watershed. So it's a whole other hurdle to tackle with a more of a non-point source.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to research ecologist Kristen Boska with the U.S. Geological Survey, looking at a big report on the upper Mississippi River. Water quality, water quantity, ecosystems, wildlife, and more. Still time for your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Kristen, I know the report looked at habitat alongside the Mississippi River. Fewer forests, I understand, in some key floodplains. What do we see there?
Right. So we've got this amazing land cover data set that we collect decadally. And there's been a noticeable decline in floodplain forest cover over time. And we know that large flood events, like the 1993 flood, result in mass mortality of forests. And what happens when you get these kind of openings in the canopy, where you have a lot of light all of a sudden shining through, is establishment of non-native species like reed canary grass and Japanese hops, which once they're there, it's very difficult to reestablish trees. So some of those areas result in sort of a loss of forest. We don't have the findings from the 2019 flood, which was also a record, long duration flood. But I believe they're working on estimating mortality across the river related to that. So there may be additional mortality or loss of floodplain forest as a result of that in certain reaches of the river.
So floods are damaging forests. Is it flipped around to, are there certain types of riverside ecosystems that kind of slow the flow, prevent that quick increase in water level in a river?
That's more at a watershed scale. The forests themselves can slow the water, once it's on the floodplain. But I think the damage is really in those long duration of the flooding. If it was a flood where it lasted a week and came down, but the 2019 flood, that was, I think, a record flood for much of the river system in terms of its duration. And so it's just the length of time those trees are inundated that's causing the problem.
We heard from Brad in Madison, who's wondering if at the bottom of the Mississippi they're testing for chemicals like PFAS or lead. I know we look for those things in our lakes and other waterways. How about the river?
I believe the Wisconsin DNR is measuring PFAS locally because of some of the PFAS that's been found in La Crosse particularly, and so they're concerned about the impacts to the fish community and so forth. I'm not so sure about lead. I do believe the Upper Mississippi River Basin Commission, they've put together kind of an interstate water quality component. And I believe they have a report coming out that does dive into contaminants, particularly in fish tissue. So I'm not exactly sure. I think they look at PCBs, maybe mercury. I don't know about lead.
We had a caller who couldn't stay on the line named Kathleen, who says she's 91. She's been on or in the river since she was a kid. Remembers pushing garbage out of her way, swimming in the lake or in the river, and says, from where she's sitting anyway, it's gotten a lot cleaner over time. Is that a fair assessment? Have we taken better care of the Mississippi River over the last, 7-8 decades?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I went to college here 20 years ago, and when I came here to La Crosse, I was told not to swim in the river by people that lived here. And now I swim in the river most weekends. So I think a lot of that has been a result of legislation like the Clean Water Act that has cut down on the inputs of some of our waste materials. And I think most people I talk to that are my elders have seen noticeable improvements, at least to this stretch of the river that borders Wisconsin.
Kristen, I know we've talked about some good things, some worrisome things. Is it hard to give just one grade or a thumbs up or thumbs down to a big river system like the Upper Mississippi?
Oh, definitely. It's a huge system. It's diverse in so many ways, and it's changing. It's constantly changing. That's what rivers do. And so recognizing what is a change for the good or for the less good really depends on what you're looking at. There's lots of different, I mean, even in this report, we go through a bunch of different indicators. And so I don't think I could give the whole system one grade. You'd have to break it up.
Kristen, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for sharing this research with us.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Kristen Boska is a research ecologist with the U.S. Geological Survey based out of La Crosse. We talked through today about a big study looking at changes over time in the Upper Mississippi River. Again, some good news, some points of concern. You could check out the whole report. I think we've got a link up at WPR.org/Central Time. And I'm having Mississippi River withdrawal. It's been a while since I've been there. So if you're there, take a picture. Send it to us right now, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. The producers can pop it on the screen for me. Again, take a picture of the Mississippi River, email ideas@WPR.org.